The National Weather Service warning of an impactful winter storm bringing heavy snow and high winds to parts of the East Coast starting tomorrow. Blizzard conditions could stretch from New Jersey into New England, making travel extremely dangerous and resulting in likely power outages. I'm Amy Held in Washington, and this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century. This is NPR.
It's a brisk morning here on the Augustana College campus, but friends, you're just in time for a conversation with this week's guest, Decker Plain from the city of Bettendorf. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll join us here on WVIK for local radio the way it's meant to be brewed on Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded. Well, Decker Plain, what a joy. You are one of the busiest people I know, and to have 55 minutes to talk with you is just pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, and I know it's going to be great fun.
Well, whenever you and I get together, it's usually pretty good fun.
Usually great laughs, and usually for a great cause. So
it's usually for a great cause, and we're going to get to that.
That's right.
But I got to start at the very beginning, because I think you know by now, I'm just incurably nosy. But you're a local kid, right? You grew up around these parts.
Yeah, Central Davenport, right by Vanderveer Park.
Yeah? Well, that's a pretty good neighborhood.
Yeah, great neighborhood.
Yeah.
Went to St. Paul's grade school and then went away to a high school seminary. A lot of people chuckle at that. I was there 4 years and then 2 years at St. Louis University.
Great Jesuit school.
Major seminary.
Yeah.
And then it was time to take vows and I asked them what they were. They said poverty, chastity, and obedience. And I couldn't do any of those three, so it was time to go.
See, I didn't know all that, but no wonder you and Wooten got along so well.
Yeah.
Because he was on the brink of vows, right?
Yeah.
And then his excuse was St. Bernadette, his saintly wife.
Yes.
But
and she was.
Yeah, she was. She sure was. I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah.
We got a lot of ties to St. Louis University here. There's always been sort of a simpatico between, for some reason, the Scandinavian Lutherans and those irksome Jesuits, you know?
So
it's always been a nice little fit. We've had great students from University High at St. Louis and everything. And then you came back to the Quad Cities. But now walk me, though, first from that seminary experience, all that kind of stuff, into your wonderful career in public service.
Well, I got back from St. Louis, and I was the oldest of 10 children. Mm-hmm. And my mom and dad said, hey, you can stay here a while. And my youngest brother, Mark, was, I think, two. So I got a job at Eagle Signal through a generous uncle and worked second shift, took care of Mark in the morning shift and worked second shift. And then eventually got back into going to Ambrose, going to major in business at that point. And my good friend, Mike Halfman, who was best man in our wedding, talked me into joining the Bettendorf Police Department. He said, it's a lot of fun. And I knew I wasn't going to make a career with my hands at Eagle Signal as a machinist.
There you go.
That wasn't going to work. My brothers are all talented with their hands, and I'm not. And so I joined the PD in 1975, and I met Jane. Through that, we became security guards at the apartment complex that she was working at.
Mm-hmm.
And she moved us in next door. I think she had a little crush on Mike, actually. And then we got together, and we got married within a year of me joining the PD. And then rose through the police department ranks and became the chief in 86 and accidentally became city administrator in 90.
Well, we're going to get to that, but yeah. it was as police chief that I remember meeting you. I was a reporter.
Yep.
And yep. It's so funny for me because I'm doing the math in my head. You were probably in your mid-upper 30s when I first met you, somewhere in there.
Actually, if it was chief, I was 33 when I became chief.
Yeah. And it was I think I got to know you a little bit, a couple of years after that. And I look at you, I still remember, you're the same guy. I mean, I still think of you as a guy in his mid-30s who's always funny, always keeping me on my toes.
I've always loved you for that, Kai. You've always had some problem with your depth perception, but I've always loved it.
It's funny that you mention that because I do have a problem with depth. That's why I'll never golf. I mean, I went out one time. I was in a buddy's wedding party, and he wanted all the guys to go play golf. And after that, I got a letter from the PGA humbly requesting that I never come back.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been that way ever since.
I've got a T-shirt that says, if you don't golf, don't start.
But you are a golfer, right?
I am. Yeah, I play a bit.
Well, I bore people with this all the time, but because I'm on the Rock Island County Forest Preserve, we oversee a golf course, Indian Bluff. Have you ever golfed that one?
I have. Not in a while. And
but
I
need reviews. So you go golf at some time and tell me what you think.
All right.
Because the team out there...
I haven't seen it in a while. So
well, the
be
team
great.
Is doing a great job.
Awesome.
And we're actually going to put some new things in this year.
I'll get over
so
there and
get out
check
there.
It out.
Okay. So you get in the... You rise up to the role of chief. And I'm just going to make a surmise here, right? So I've known... excellent law enforcement officers throughout my life. We've been blessed with many in the Quad Cities community. There is that difference, though, to be the leader, which is very poetic, but then even manager, which is more prosaic. And it just seems your life was kind of guiding you that way and then through it. But the fact that you had been a seminarian, you had considered a clergy role, I mean, that says a lot about who you are as a person and a leader. Who saw that in you and slotted you towards becoming chief, do you think?
Well, I think a couple of people.
Yeah.
Keith Chandler, who was the chief prior to me, elevated me into a role as detective sergeant. What was interesting, when he promoted me to sergeant, I was pretty sure I was going to have to go back out on the street. I'd been a detective for a bit, and I loved that job, and I excelled at it. So when he offered me the job, he said, you know, this is not a detective job. You're back on the street. And I knew that if I refused it, it would probably be an end to my career. So I said, I'll take it. I figured I was going to get back in uniform. And about 4 days later, he came back and said, now I'm going to leave you in the detective bureau as the sergeant of the detective bureau. So, and I was good there. And I think the big change when I became the chief was I wasn't used to, I was with a great group of stars that excelled. Mm. I wasn't used to the people that weren't showing up to work and maybe even drinking, you know, having issues. And the 4 years that I was chief was probably I don't want to say the worst of my career, but they were the most challenging of my career because I wasn't quite ready for all that came at me.
Yeah.
For a young person. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that says a lot too, because I've watched a lot of young people for my job, and I'm always excited when people get a gig that they're not quite ready for, because that's where you find out who the real leaders are.
Yeah.
You know, the ones who are able to navigate that. And then you become the city administrator. And that was a pretty rocky time for dear old Bettendorf.
Well, you know, Ann Hutchinson was the mayor.
Yep.
And we knew each other from my detective days. And we had some issues through a couple of administrations in the late 80s, early 90s. And as it turned out, she said, hey, the city administrator is going to resign. And I want you to take over. And we were having a drink at that time talking about that.
Yeah.
I said, could I have another scotch? What are you talking about, me take over? And she said, just do this for a while. Get us stable. Everybody likes you. You'll do fine. I did it for about 7 months, and I did it fairly well and had a lot of help by a couple of key people that put me in a place to succeed, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a history, because you correct my memory if I'm off here, Decker, but I was a reporter at that time, and I often tell people it's one of the funniest stories of my very plebeian journalism career. Is I was at a city council meeting, and things were going, and to be clear, there wasn't any chicanery here, but it taught me how if you don't have your eye on the ball with accounting and stuff like that, it can get an organization into a lot of trouble, right? And they needed somebody like you. But I ran into you at a city council meeting and I said, well, how do you like the shift from being police chief to city administrator? And you looked me in the eye and he says, well, I am still armed.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if you remember that, but that was a long time.
I don't, but it's true.
It's true. For a while, you know, you just wanted to be on the same.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, though, I find that very interesting is that because later I had a chance to join a different elected body that was having some difficulties and see how it's just that really sort of boring blocking and tackling that needs to happen to make a government entity thrive. There's no moonshots or anything like that. It's just you got to block, you got to tackle, and then, you know, the results will come over time.
Yeah, it's really about stability. Continuity, and just kind of keeping the ship going straight.
Yeah.
My old police chief, who I never thought had a lot of wisdom at the time that I worked for him, said to us when we started, he said, take care of the little people, take care of the old people, and let the ones in the middle kind of fend for themselves. Once they hit the curb, kick them back in. And
wow.
It's kind of, you know, it's kind of true. It's take care of the stuff that's in front of you.
Right.
And everything else will kind of fold in.
Well, my higher education corollary for that, and I had a great mentor and a guy you know, Steve Balls, and have another great mentor now in Andrea Talentino.
But two great talents.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two great people.
Great leaders. And when I try to tell this to higher ed folks in other parts of the country, they don't get it. But you and I grew up here. It's like on the river, you got a buoy that's way off to starboard and a buoy that's way off to port. The goal is not to go hit each one successively. You find that middle line.
Yeah. You pop by the sailor man.
You stick to the middle, baby.
Yeah, that's right. That's
and
right.
Avoid banging into the buoys.
Yeah,
you'll be
it.
All right.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but this is a remarkable tenure. Is it going on 35
years? 36.
36 years.
Finished 35. I'm in 36 as city administrator.
Yeah.
And did 15 years in the police department.
Earlier, right.
So, two full careers. I retired as chief. I got my pension. Yeah, I think...
Has anybody had a 35-year go as a city administrator that you know of?
Oh, yeah. Steve Shanker, who is in Ames, Iowa.
Ames, Iowa. Okay, well, I don't know that.
I think Shank is 44 years.
Mm, mm,
He's got a lot more time than I've got, obviously, and still there, and still doing very well. But it's unusual in the business.
Yeah.
The average tenure is somewhere around 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I think it's getting a little longer now because... City councils are getting a little crazier in terms of, you know, pushing people out. The theory of we'll just get a new manager like they do in baseball, it doesn't work well in city administration.
No. Or a county, because when I joined the county board, we didn't have one, right?
Yep.
And it was a fight to get one because, you know, one thing that my career in journalism taught me is that an administrator, manager, they can make a world of difference, right? And I grew up in Rock Island when we had the great John Phillips as a city manager for many years. And,
awesome.
Oh,
awesome.
Yeah.
And John was the epitome of stability.
Well, he still is. I still see him.
I do too.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. But I mean, it's just, so you have that going for you. And then to make the case to elected officials who, let's face it, we're part-timers. We don't, you know, we're not steeped in all this. To make the case to them that, listen, you got to have enough humility to step aside and let a pro do this. That was a huge mountain to overcome in the county. And then we went through a couple real quick, and that doesn't help anybody. And now we have a wonderful Jim Grafton, who's a very experienced administrator, and it makes a world of difference.
Jimmy's a great guy, done a great job. And it also requires, though, it does require stability in the council or the board and continuity there, because if you're constantly changing that as well, everybody comes in with new ideas and they want to get stuff done in their terms. And so, you know, if you're going to do stuff for a long period of time, like we did the I-74 bridge, it took 30 years. And you got to have a lot of patience. You got to have a lot of continuity. And it just some things are just slow by nature. And you want them sometimes to be slow by nature.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about the bridge. And I'm looking for inspiration because I'm tired of telling people when the first time I sat in on a Quad Cities passenger rail task force.
Yeah,
was.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Same thing.
But let's talk about the bridge. What are your early memories? Because, you know, sometimes it's a fault of all of us that we don't look at that long view, big picture that's kind of over the horizon. But in this case, we did. How did this come to be?
Well, you know, a number of people, and I would say that the godfather of it was Gary Vallon, who was the Bi-State Regional Commission Executive Director before Denise. Mm-hmm. And Gary had the idea that we needed to get a three-pronged approach, that we needed to remove the tolls off the Centennial Bridge to take the volume off I-74, that I-74 would be a federally funded project, and then the third bridge would somewhere be between East Moline and Bettendorf down the road. Mm. And so he authored that, and then Glenn Erickson, who was the Scott County Administrator, graduate of Augie, was on the Augie
Board. As was Ann Hutchinson. We mentioned her, too.
And the irony in this is how it came full circle back to Ray LaHood, who was really the kingpin of how we got it finally done. Mm-hmm. But there were lots and lots of people, all the mayors, county board chairs back then, vowed this would be the number one project. And we went to Washington often. I think I was there maybe 40 times over my career. And as I've said publicly, I drank a lot of scotch on behalf of the Quad Cities to lobby various lawmakers and transportation officials to get us positioned. And I did my fair share.
Well, listen, I'm not going to name any names, my friend, but I got to go on one of the chamber trips as a representative of Augustana College. And so the thing is, here I am working for this, I mean, not terribly pietistic, but yet a Lutheran institution. And I get on this this plane, and all of a sudden, again, no names, they're taking orders up and down. It says, hey, when they park the plane, we're going to go hit a liquor store and buy everything for the flight home. And I'm like, well, I don't think I'm supposed to do that.
Yeah, that's right. Not in the Augie credit card.
Not at all. Not at all. So but it was a very meaningful meeting, and you were kind of our shepherd on the ground in D.C. We went to the Pentagon. We went to Department of Transportation. We went to the Treasury Building, and inside that building, what a beautiful building!
It was cool.
Most people only get to see the outsides of these things, but I owe you that among many other things. You were my guide to some of those places that you can just smell the power.
Well, Tom Hart was our fearless leader then.
Mayor of Davenport.
Well, but he went to the
Quad City. Oh, that's right. He was at the development group, right.
And you know, when you talk about the people who are left standing, you know, Denise Bulat and I are probably the two people left standing from the original group. But there were lots of people that pushed this thing from every direction possible.
Yeah.
And the relationships that we had with Iowa DOT, Illinois DOT, our representatives, you know, Sherry Bustos did an incredible job. Jim Nussel got the first big dollar amount from the Iowa side. And then I mentioned Ray. Ray LaHood was really the finishing touch. He's the guy that got us there. And frankly, it was the relationship between Glenn and Ray that kind of cemented it. But Mike Freemeyer, my second mayor, Don Welvert, Dale Iman, Lou Steinbrecher, all these guys.
Yeah.
And Dee Bremmer, we did lots of work that made this thing go.
So Dee Bremmer was a longtime Scott County administrator. Yeah. And after she had retired, we were going through yet another kerfluffle at Rock Island County. And I said, if we could get an invite to you, would you come be an interim, just an interim for a little bit? And I almost had her, but unfortunately, the leadership at the time didn't see the wisdom in that. But that would have been a great episode right there.
She was the best.
Well, I want to tell you a Ray LaHood story I have such great admiration for him. If you don't know, he got his start at the right here in the Quad Cities at Bi-State, and then he made his way through politics. He was quite a while a Republican congressman from Peoria, did a great job there. He actually joined the Obama Democratic administration and served as Secretary of Transportation. Well, we got him to Augustana to give our annual Curtis Lecture in Public Affairs. And he said something I will never forget, because this was in about 2018 or so, right? So think of the times, right? And someone asked him about the rising dysfunction. Remember how sweet that sounds now in 2018 in DC? And he said, you know, I think the challenge we face as a nation is we're electing to office people who don't believe in the offices to which they are elected. And that's just always stuck with me. So when I look at people who are coming up in politics, and I keep a finger in there, I try to think, you know, do you really believe in the office that you're running for? Because it can make a difference.
Huge difference.
A lot of it's boring.
Yeah.
A lot of it's very boring, especially at the local level. But if you got to believe in it. And you don't do it just because you want to tear it all down.
And it's really, I call it a team sport.
Yeah.
Because you really need, as I tell young council people, by yourself, that vote means nothing. But you got to have three or four for sure, and prefer more. I mm-hmm. always sought the 7-0 vote when I was first city administrator, because I thought unanimity was very important. Over time, I've gotten a little cynical on that. But still, you want, if you can, you want the whole council to support something, mm-hmm. because it just continues to promulgate that. Mm-hmm. And when there's dissension, if there's too much dissension, that's not good. And so you really have to work at getting everybody together and say, okay, how do we find your vote? How do we find the 50-50? How do we? And I've always I prided myself in my negotiating career as being a 50-50 guy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do half, you do half. But if you want all this to be on us and none's on you, then you don't have any skin in the game.
Yeah.
So everybody's got to kind of meet a little bit.
Yes.
Everybody's got to put a little in.
Right.
Which might mean I don't get to get everything that I want,
mm-hmm.
which is life.
Well, one of the things that I have a little, so I don't know how the laws are in Iowa, but in Illinois, there are certain things that you have to do on a roll call and certain things you can do on a voice vote, right? And what's become kind of passé in some circles is you do that first establishing roll and then you just keep going, do I have a motion to the previous roll? Motion to the previous roll. And nobody wants to be the one to slow things down. But I think that's wrong. At least with a voice vote, a couple of voices might say nay. Right. And that's a sign of a healthy organization. I do a lot of governance work in higher ed. And one of the things we tell younger colleagues, you know, if your board is unanimous on everything, you're not trying hard enough. You got to have a conversation where there's going to be some compromise, because the best idea isn't always the one that gets the 15-0 vote or whatever it is. Right. It's the one that's, you know, maybe 9-6 or something like that.
Yeah. 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 And we have to remember, those of us that are professional staff, that not everybody comes to this with the same level of knowledge or history and or belief. Mm. And so you really have to respect that others see it differently.
Yeah.
But at the end of the game, you know, it's about the greater good for all, not right. the greater good for some. And so you just kind of keep that rolling.
Yeah.
And
I take positions that a lot of people don't like. I still do that. But my philosophy is, what's the bestest for the mostest? Because you're not going to get the perfect for everybody, you know, yeah. or the perfect for a very tiny minority. Those are you got to avoid that like the plague, right?
Yeah.
I hate perfection.
Well,
and I my life has kind of showed
that. Yeah, exactly. Well, and the other thing is, you have to help convince them that we can't keep bogging stuff down, though, either.
Yeah.
At some point, you got to make a decision, and
yeah.
you got to move on. And, you know, Greg Jaeger and I, he was my city attorney.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
took and we were together a lot, and I'm together a lot with Chris Curran, our current city attorney.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have taken kind of the position that when Greg was there, he was already aim guy, and I'm already fire guy. And so you gotta find the middle, you know. Sometimes I gotta aim more, and sometimes he had to fire more. It's the way it works.
Well, I just want to remind everybody that we're listening to a conversation with Decker Plain, the city administrator for Bettendorf. It is administrator, right?
It is city
I want to make sure I get yeah, that yeah, right, because yeah, that's a big difference.
I'm not city manager.
Not city manager. We'll get to maybe that a little bit, but we want you to stay tuned. The conversation will continue. We're going to take a little break here in just a moment, but remind you that you're listening to Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded on WVIK. And if you'd like to support conversations and local stories like this, you just got to go to wvik.org and you'll find the donate button. We'll be right back. It's 29 past the hour.
My name is Danielle Roman from Rock Island, Illinois, and I enjoy having a nice cup of coffee while I listen to Morning Edition. WVIK is my NPR station.
I'm Peter Sagal, and this week's Wait, Wait, we celebrate the closing of the Winter Olympics with some of our gold medal moments, featuring celebrity chef Roy Choi and actor Cynthia Nixon. Come celebrate the thrill of victory on this week's quiz from NPR.
Saturdays at 11 a.m. on WVIK.
This week on No Small Endeavor, relationship expert Dr. Alexandra Solomon.
we grow up on a steady diet of romance and romantic ideas.
With many practices for flourishing lives and relationships.
Compassion gets us so much further with the people in our lives than anything else.
Sundays at 6 a.m. on WVIK.
My guest is Decker Plain here on Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded. And friends, I want to once again put in a plug for that. You just heard No Small Endeavor. It's Decker, this is a show that's on at 6 a.m. on Sunday mornings, which not a lot of us are up and about for. But it is one of the best programs I've heard. This guy is every week talking about really deep, meaningful, yet useful things. And it, I get up early so I can make sure I can hear No Small Endeavor.
I'm not sure that I do that, but I do listen to WVIK, and I'm a sustaining member, and we like the love the programming. I listen to it more in the car than anything on my way to and, and from.
But
everybody should do that.
Well, I appreciate that you do that, and I always love to listen to or hear how people do listen. We also have that little device that's got a woman's name that I don't want to say because it'll set off everyone's smart devices at home. But I listen through her. I can listen through my phone. It's really great. Well, it's also been really great getting to hang with you, because in addition to getting to know you when I was a reporter, getting to work with you when I was doing some other administrative things for Augustana, you and I get to kind of kick back and have a little fun every now and then. Because, friends, if you're listening now and you know Decker Plain, odds are you know him, because he is the best fundraising host of anybody I've ever met or ever will meet. And nobody can squeeze money out of a closed purse or wallet like Decker Plain.
Well, it's been great fun being a really productive member of the community by raising money for the community. And in fact, I'm doing the Putnam fundraiser tonight. I did the Martini Shake Off Thursday night, and I love doing it.
Yep.
And it's great fun. And to your point, I have this talent to be able to convince people that they should give with their heart, not their heads. And pretend that it's not a garage sale, it's a fundraiser.
That's one of your best lines for auctions and things like that. But you must get 20 times more invitations than your calendar would admit, even if you did this full-time plus. How do you decide the things that are important to you? Or is it just more like you said, more is it the heart? I mean, how do you decide what you're going to say yes to?
I really don't say no to hardly anything. It's calendar-driven. You know, my council business with city council gets in the way, like it should. Occasionally, you know, Friday or Saturday night that Jane hasn't got something scheduled for me. But we don't say no to too many things. And I've met some great people as a result of it. That's the really cool part about this guy, as you know, is you meet some really terrific people, both the people who are putting the show on for whatever the organization is, and the people that are generous to that organization.
And the people who make the organization work. Absolutely. Because a lot of times at these events, we get to meet the staffers. Yeah. And they're in the trenches day in and day out. And when you get to hang with them, I mean, their commitment is just amazing.
It continues to amaze me, people that do these roles and how passionate they are. You know, I met Kathy Wyan probably, 45, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And Kathy's just as passionate today as she was 50 years ago, and doing stuff for River Action, so much fun. To do Nahant Marsh coming up, the Oberholzer Awards. I never knew anything about Ernest
Oberholzer, right.
Until I started doing that for Brian. So, it's cool to meet these folks.
And to learn. I mean, I think that's one thing I like to flatter myself I might have in common with you, is that curiosity. I mean, it's served me well so far.
Absolutely.
I think it serves you well, and to be able to continue to do stuff like that. When you talk about greats, somebody who I don't think gets enough credit is a local auctioneer named Jana Stenzel, she is a force of nature in and of herself, but the way she gives of herself to benefit and push forward organizations, whether it's the Project Quad Cities or you fill in the blank. I mean, she's always there.
She's done Every Child with Jim Hampton and I. As you know, I started my emceeing with Jim Hampton through the chamber, and Jimmy and I have done a lot of stuff together. In fact, a lot of people confuse us, and that's fun. And then we got introduced to Jana, and it's been kind of a dynamic trio, and we split off with each other because sometimes I'm already doing one, and I'll say, hey, I'm doing one that night, so call Jim or call Jana or call both. So we play off each other, and sometimes we're solo, sometimes we're with each other, sometimes all three of us are there, sometimes I'm with you. It's been a blast, and I love doing it.
Well, I'm glad you keep mentioning your spouse, because sometimes the only way I can get a date with my spouse is if I say, hey, you want to come along to this fundraiser?
Yeah, well, Jane used to go, and her hearing has gotten bad, and so it's a lot of noise for her, and the other, as you know, we spend time on the stage. We don't spend time at the table.
It's not like we're at, right.
So
right,
unless
right.
she knows who's at the table with her, some nights can be frustrating. Yeah. So we pick and choose where she goes, and we have great fun when we do it. So
well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of the ones that I do, it's coming up, is the Gray Matters gala ball. It's going to be a disco ball this year. Haley DeGreeve, wonderful leader in our community. And then she so very generously said, can I offer you a table? And I'm like, no, because, I mean, they did that a year ago, and I don't have any time to hang out with those people. I said, you sell that table. You get some money out of that table.
That's right.
So that's what we're doing. I also got in trouble because I did not tell that lovely spouse of mine, whom you know well, what the theme was until like yesterday. And she's like, wait a minute, I got a week to get a disco outfit put together.
Yeah.
But it's always fun.
Yeah, I didn't, the shake off the other night, and I didn't know that we were doing a cowboy theme because it's been a formal theme. So,
yes.
And I have, as you know,
you got a
like
great
you,
wardrobe.
Seven or eight jackets and tuxes.
So what did you wear to the cowboy theme?
Well, I wore my James Bond navy blue tux. And it wasn't quite cowboy enough, but
well,
but it worked.
I'm so happy you mentioned that, because if Jenny's listening right now, she's going to know that I'm not the only scatterbrain.
Yeah.
who comes up with passes along the theme a little bit.
Well, we both have jobs, and you know, I look for the script. I don't look at necessarily the advertising of it. So, I figure somebody will tell me what's going on, and so I just looked at the script for tonight on the way, you know, before I came over, and.
Well, you did one last night.
Yeah.
You got no time to prep like
that's
this.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, but it's so much fun. And what's fascinating to me, and I've said this a lot of times, you've heard me say it, I'm never surprised and I'm always amazed at the generosity of Quad Citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Because people give to every one of these things, and they give handily. And we are so blessed with all of the not-for-profits that are doing great work in our community, and the generosity of this community to support them makes me very proud to be a Quad Citizen.
Well, and me too. And one of the things we love about being in the Quad Cities is it's a place with stories. It's a little bit gritty sometimes, and that's what makes for good stories. And luckily, we have an outstanding storyteller in Roald Tweet and his Rock Island lines. And even though Dr. Tweet is no longer with us, I'm so grateful that every week we're able to present just one more episode of the one and only Dr. Roald Tweet and Rock Island lines. I'll be back with Decker Plane in just a moment, friends. Stay tuned.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. In an age that is losing touch with its roots, Rock Islanders are fortunate. Immigrants to this area have preserved at least some of their language, from Swedish, Spanish, Greek, and German to Chippewa and Chinese. We are still a mosaic of American cultures. But one important language has disappeared, Rocket, a dialect of that rich and poetic language of whistles, hisses, screeches, clicks, and bangs known as railroad. It was a language once common in the United States, but now rare. The native speakers of Rocket, the engines and cars of the old Rock Island lines, lie silent and rusting among the weeds on sidetracks of rail yards. Too bad that linguists didn't think to record this language before it died. Some of you remember, if you took the Rocket across mid-America when you were young, you remember how instinctively children understood the sounds trains made. We children used to put our ears to the tracks and hear the trains coming miles away in the small clicks and whines singing through the iron rails. It was even better inside the train. No train ever left a depot without going into detail about its departure in sentences of hisses, chuffs, puffs, whistles, and sharp bangs that passed from engine back through every car. I think I can, I think I can, the train said. Even at night, the train told us in measured clicks how fast it was going. whether it was speeding up or slowing down. The whistle far ahead announced crossings and small towns. Trains passing in opposite directions told each other what lay ahead. The voices of trains carried us across the prairie into the night and sent us to sleep against the hard benches in a lullaby of new passengers settling in and tickets being punched down the aisle. Just west of here, a retired schoolteacher has moved a Rock Island Line's caboose into her yard and turned it into a bed and breakfast as a way of preserving the good old days. It's cozy and quaint, but the caboose never hums a tune, never squeaks, not even a click, click.
Rock Island Lines with Roll Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And it's here because of you, friends. Folks go to WVIK.org, they see that donate button, and it makes possible local stories, local radio. And I'm going to put in a shameless plug here. You can also go there to find out more about our December Christmas market cruise. We just learned that there's a $1,500 per couple early bird discount if you get over there by March 6th, which is just a couple of weeks away. Find out full details at wvik.org/travel. There's also a link from the homepage. And you can learn more about heading down the Danube with Jenny and Kai. But right now, I'm heading down the Mississippi with Decker Plain from the city of Bettendorf. I can't thank you enough for being here.
A great time. Thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me.
I got to ask you this. I've been with my organization for a while. You've been with your organization for 50 years, right?
Yep.
And there's a couple of types of people who we meet as young people, and they just want to keep moving and, you know, trying something different, going here. And we know that this generation is going to be through about 6 or 7 more employers than you and I will ever get to. How do you sustain the passion? And if you're open to it, I'll tell you what I do. But I want to know, because, I mean, you are a curious person by nature, which means you're an intelligent person. So you're always going to need some kind of new stimulus. And tell us how you keep that curiosity, that passion, that dedication going for 5 flipping decades.
Yeah. I think it's more the work comes to us.
Yeah.
The people come to us. The problems come to us. And the willingness to kind of get your feet wet and get in there and try to solve the problem. I always make a little bit of a story that people think we're in government because we're either too stupid to be in the private sector or we got to be somebody's nephew. And I love to solve problems when people come in. I'm usually pretty good about saying to people, well, what would you like us to do? Mm-hmm. You might have a solution in mind because people generally have thought through some of this stuff. And, you know, I'll say if we can solve that for $500 or $600, we could probably make that happen. If it's $5,000, you probably don't want your city administrator spending $5,000 on every problem that walks in the door. And generally, they've got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally you'll hear, I don't know about it. That's why I came to you. You've been here 50 years. You figure it out. I think the stimulus of meeting new people, new problems, you know, the I-74 bridge was a great problem, but it took a long time. But there's stuff that can be done today.
Yeah.
And solving people's problems, how minuscule they are, they're real to them.
Oh, absolutely.
And so trying to figure out, okay, how do we work this out? How do we balance it, you know? I just love that challenge and that charge.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for my part, I mean, I work in a president's office of a college.
Yeah.
So a recurring theme is a parent who is calling with their children's complaints, right? Well, I'm a parent myself. My kids went off to school. And when they go away to school, the only thing you're going to hear from the first month is how terrible things are because they're making a big adjustment.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the things that I've adopted as a strategy is when mom or dad call and they're telling me about all these terrible issues, I'll say, well, let's get Junior in the conversation. I want you to ask your child to set up an appointment with me and we're going to map out a strategy. Well, I don't really want to do that because they don't know I'm calling you right now. But I said, no, you got to understand. Our job is to help your child become more adept at being an engaged citizen when I'm out of the picture and you're out of the picture and they can do it. And so have them call me. still, about half a dozen times out of 12, they don't, because they don't want their kid knowing they're
right.
fighting their battles for them.
Right.
But when it happens, it's great. And that's what I jones on, is if I, or a colleague who's got a challenge. You know, a lot of times people think higher ed administrators love saying no. I like no better word than yes. It's getting to yes. That's the hard part, right?
That's exactly right.
If you can do that, that's very, very
interesting. Negotiating with police officers and firefighters over the years, you know.
Yeah.
They're pretty strong-willed people.
Yeah.
You don't hire weak police officers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but they got to understand the reality of life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's, I think that's for everybody. Mm-hmm. That not everybody gets to get everything. And we always find that in neighborhoods, sometimes neighbors don't even know their neighbors. They want to complain about the neighbor, but they haven't talked to the neighbor. We live in a really, really close-knit neighborhood. And they kind of keep good eye on each other. We love living in this neighborhood. Probably the best thing we did in a long time. And but everybody's looking out for each other.
Yeah.
And
that's
kind of what you do. You're looking out for each other.
Well, and I'm lucky that in Rock Island, we're in a great neighborhood and pretty much everybody knows everybody. But this is a point of contention with my spouse, as I think you know, my wife is on the Rock Island City Council.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. You never, I don't know, that you ever call your county administrator with a pothole problem or your county board member, right? I don't get those calls. And poor Jenny, she's getting, about a call every night or two.
Yeah.
It's either a pothole or it's a problem with a neighbor. And, her background was in early childhood education. And why don't we just have a little conversation?
Yeah. And the first thing you ask is, have you talked to your neighbor?
I
don't want to do that. Okay. Well, that's
I want you to fix it.
That's where we got to start. Got to get the neighbor in here.
How else do you sustain a career like that? Because I envy you for that longevity, because I'm of that type that I value loyalty and things like that. But I don't see any end for you, and I don't think you should either. But how do you keep that longevity going?
Well, you know, you surround yourself with great people who are inspiring themselves.
Mm.
And I'm blessed to have a great team. And you know a bunch of them,
mm-hmm.
And they inspire me because the work that they do. I a lot of times tell people I really don't run the city much anymore. The department heads run the city.
Mm-hmm.
I'm involved in lots of regional conversations and trying to work with the council as much as I can. So getting talented people around you, even if they're more talented than you, and most of them are,
mm-hmm.
That stimulates you as well. Because you get knowledge from everywhere, and you get ideas from everywhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then to the point that we both are, and if you're involved in the community, people from the community give you lots of feedback.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't want all of it, but for the most part, you do. And and so being in the community, I think, really gets your hands around the pulse of what's going on, and just listening to people, all kinds of people.
Oh, yeah.
I just love to listen to people and have them kind of tell you what they're seeing.
I need your wisdom for something, because something that both Jenny and I have noted, you know, when we were each newly elected, we were going to change everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, you learn that you have to be collaborative and try to find that bestest for the mostest, right?
Yeah.
But now, and it's not unique to either of our bodies or your elected body or anybody else's, but when somebody is newly elected, they want to go out that gate and just, you know, set the world on fire. How do you, as a professional administrator, try to mold that energy into something that may be a little more constructive?
Well, we do it a lot through our strategic planning.
Yeah.
So every year we have that exercise and try to corral those ideas into what the priorities are going to be. And then you got to tell people, okay, these are the priorities. So that's what we're going to work on. Now, that doesn't mean that stuff that comes in the door can't get worked on. But if you're constantly working on only what's coming in the door, then you don't really have any priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And so channeling the priorities and directing yourself to those things that you really want to accomplish the most of are probably how every organization should function.
Yeah.
And then there are stuff that come in you got to deal with. That just happens.
Mm-hmm.
But setting up a strategic plan and working the plan and then replanning. You just keep doing it. It's pretty natural. Once that happens.
Back to the bridge for a minute. It was fun. I was just listening to a couple of people talking, and they were saying, oh, you mean you haven't walked up the bridge? Oh, you've got to walk up the bridge.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Because it really is, and it made me think from it, yeah, it's great. I've walked it. I've ridden my bike up it. I've done a side-by-side tandem with my wife up it. It's been, but just that act, and then stopping at the Oculus and just soaking up that scenery, have you had a chance to just enjoy it as a spectator?
Absolutely. The couple days before it really opened, and nobody was up there.
Yeah.
We got to walk actually physically on the bridge itself, all four lanes if we wanted. So we did that. And I got the opportunity to go up to the very top, piggybacking on the way up, but I didn't want to go all the way up. I about three quarters of the way up. I said, that's enough. I don't need to do that. But I did the Oculus by myself before it started. I learned that from the John Deere Classic. The year that I was chair, past chairman, we have a past chairman's group, one of them said to me, hey, on Sunday morning, before the prayer service, take your cart and ride the golf course just at dawn. Just ride the whole course. Mm-hmm. Nobody's the only guys out there are setting pins and stuff. Because you did this to get to this pinnacle, just ride the course and think about all the stuff you did. And, you know, you reflect on that, and it was like, wow, this was a great journey.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Well, I think a strong case can be made to slap your name on that bridge. But that aside, when you get a huge milestone like that in the rearview mirror, I haven't had nearly the kind that you have, but then there's that exhale, right? And it does feel good, but I know you look for what's next. What are things that you're looking forward to, Decker?
Well, you know, a couple things I'm really proud of that just don't get the headlines. But really, and you know part of this. The radio system for the Quad Cities, for the police, fire,
emergency.
Public works, emergency personnel, is now one network. When I first started, we didn't have communications with each other. Mm-mm. Didn't happen. Now, everyone, we have 11 new towers between, and that took a lot of work with a lot of the governmental folks. And on both sides of the river, and Darren Hart from the Sheriff's Department kind of led the charge there. But every public safety answering point had to be involved and had to come in. Scott County, it was a little easier because we had already kind of brought ourselves together. But that little project was awesome. And to be able to say we're on one radio system.
Yeah, yeah.
In Scott County, we were lucky to have one solid waste commission. Mm-hmm. And all my mayors have been part of that, you know, and Bob's currently a part of that. Matter of fact, Bob's on four or five boards like I think you are. And I think that's what's interesting, too, is that a lot of people don't know that lots of folks in the governmental entity are with each other a lot. We're partnering a lot.
Yes, right.
More so than a lot of people understand.
Right.
And I'm really proud of that because we've tried to be regional partners all along and pull our fair share and then cause others to want to do stuff regionally. And I look back at, you know, Paul Mulcahy and
I still see Paul and Nancy from time to time.
Eddie Winborn, Nancy. When I was first an administrator, those mayors and county board chairs, they get together once a month. And we see each other, and we talk through issues, and it's great camaraderie, and it's great work to do things together, and I think that's kind of the unsung work. That I love doing.
Well, and I'm going to come back to you on that, but it's exactly right because the two things you described, the emergency communications network and waste management, if you're not thinking about it, then it's working, right? Because if something goes sideways, that's when, and it's too late, right? And I'm proud, too, of the emergency network because we were at a point when I started that some of our deputies, you know, Rock Island County is really weirdly shaped.
Mm-hmm.
It's very long and narrow and goes along a whole bunch of river. We got more beachfront than anybody else.
that's
but,
fact.
But our deputies had to use their personal cell phones in some parts of the county because they couldn't get into the enhanced radio system, right? So there were people who didn't want to spend the money on it. And I'm like, nah, you can't spend enough on that. If your grandma is in Illinois City or Cordova and they're in an emergency, right?
Yeah.
That's what you need.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you mentioned that because people don't think about it, right?
And there's got to be somebody who is thinking about that. And everybody wonders, well, who is that guy or who is that gal that's doing that? And, you know, that both EMAs, where we have a Quad City Local Emergency Planning group, and we merged those so that we're the Quad City Local Emergency Planning Council. And we're together once a month, and that's a phenomenal group of people.
Well, I don't want to get us too bogged down in the government side of this.
Yeah, sorry.
I want to know, on the personal side, Digger, what's something you're looking forward to? I know you and Jane just had a wonderful vacation. You don't have to show us all the pictures, but
that's
I'll take
right.
a look at a few.
That's right.
But what are you looking forward to on the personal front?
Well, I'm a big golf freak, mm-hmm. and so when we were in Hawaii recently, I played Kapalua with my daughter. My son was supposed to be there, but one of his St. Bernards passed away, so they had a difficult time. But Decker and I are going to we're going to have a golf trip this summer, and we usually try to get a golf trip with Jane's sister and brother-in-law and Jenny and Joe, and we're going to do that again. The ICMA conference is in Long Beach, California this year.
Tell people what that is.
That's the International City Managers Association, mm-hmm. and I've been involved with that for 35 years, and we'll go to that conference. And so, you know, the summer usually brings a lot of golf, a lot of opportunities for golf, a lot of outings. My week of service at the John Deere Classic, which I love, I've been doing that a long time. So my summers usually go pretty fast, and we have a family reunion with my family. My brother Andy coordinates a wonderful plane invitational, where I think we're on our 45th version of that. We'll do that. So there's plenty of stuff that's going to happen, but a lot of my life is golf-based.
Yeah. You just said something. We're going to run out of time here, but you mentioned you've got quite a few siblings.
Yeah, I do.
How many stayed in the area? I mean, it's natural for them to kind of take off, but...
Six of us are here.
Ah.
Two are in Iowa City.
Yeah.
And one in Grand Junction, Colorado, and one in Phoenix.
That's not bad at all.
And everybody wants to go to Matt's in Phoenix in the winter.
In the winter, not in the summer.
He said, I didn't know I had this many brothers and sisters. You know? So
more than he signed up for.
Yeah, and we do a big St. Patrick's Day. We're Irish. My middle name is Patrick, so all my siblings and their families will be over on St. Patrick's Day, well, a couple of days before, actually.
Something else I just learned. I didn't realize your middle name was Patrick.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Decker P. Plain. Sherman T. Potter.
That's right. And if you get that reference,
that's right.
You're listening to the right radio
that's
station,
right.
That's for sure. All right, one more question for you, because at least one more. But I always like to ask interesting guests, you know, what are you reading? What are you watching? What are recommendations might you make?
Well, you know, I'm not a great reader anymore, but... I listen to books, and I've been trying to get through the Ben Franklin, the Walter Isaacson version. And I love to watch anything Ken Burns. I think if you don't listen to Ken Burns and watch his documentaries, you're missing out. And, you know, binge watching Landman right now.
Now, tell me about that. I'm not familiar with that, but is that part of the... What, tell you,
it's part of the Yellowstone
series.
That's
what I thought. Yes, that's what I thought.
Taylor Sheridan or Sheridan Taylor, my mind's going. I binge watched the whole Yellowstone thing, and then this looked interesting. And who doesn't love Billy Bob Thornton?
Oh,
so you know, you
absolutely.
So, but you know, when I come home, when I decompress, I love to watch golf on Saturday and Sunday, or a great hockey game. Jane and I, my first date was, I played in the morning, and we went to a Blackhawks North Star game that night. So
you played hockey?
I did for about 40 years.
Oh, lovely!
I learned in the seminary and
in St. Louis.
Yeah, actually in Moments.
And
then went to St. Louis and did a little intramural stuff there. So
yeah,
and I've got great buddies that I've played with for a lot of years, and broke my leg in Dubuque our daughter Sarah was born. So. I've got great hockey memories and things that affected us because of hockey. So, so I watched the girls' game the other day and loved it, and I'll watch the men's in the morning.
My dream scenario didn't come true. I wanted the Swedes to win the bronze and the American women to win the gold. And then, unfortunately, U.S. and Sweden went way too early, even though Sweden took them to overtime on the men's side.
They did.
Yeah, anyway.
Sweden was probably an underrated team. So.
Well, you know those Swedes. You can't
tell
them anything.
Trust them.
You know, not at all. But boy, I tell you what, one thing I can trust is that if I get a chance to hang out with Decker Plain, I'm going to take it. So thank you very much for your time, Decker, and because I know there's a lot of demands on it. Like you said, you were working the boards last night. You're going to do it again tonight and go make a lot of money.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Kai. This was great fun, and I'd love to do it again.
Hey, well, The invitation's a standing one. Let's just make it that way. Well, friends, right, that's going to have to do it for this week with, again, thanks to Decker Plain from the city of Bettendorf. I want to tell you just a little bit about the forecast for today. Just so you know, we got a little chance for flurries lingering till about 1 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with a high near 30. The winds are still going to be a factor today and tonight and tomorrow. But then Monday, sunny skies, a high getting up near 30, near 45 on Tuesday, 50 on Wednesday, and guess what? Mostly sunny Friday with a high expected near 58 degrees. We will take it. Ahead on WVIK, it's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Be sure to join us next week when our guest will be the one and only Dr. Lendl Calder from Augustana College. That's right here on Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded. Find our podcast at WVIK.org or just tune in to Quad Cities NPR WVIK 90.3 FM and HD in Rock Island and at 95.9 FM K240DZ Dubuque. Coming up on 11 o'clock, friends, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is next. Thanks for listening to Saturday Morning Live.